Good. All right. If it's Tuesday at 1 o'clock, it must be Tuesdays with Dave. What?
Sorry, I think not from the job.
Oh. A little weird. Must be Tuesdays with Dave. All right. So as you can see, we're live streaming today. And that was Alex, our expert sound guy, who got us all set up. This is our third attempt at this. The second one actually failed last week. That's why we're doing this this week. So I want to welcome Silver Success Club members. I want to welcome Mastery members, and I want to welcome Gold Coaching members. And I want to welcome anyone that I just didn't mention on the call as well. Especially welcome to the, not yet, give me like 15 minutes. Yeah. I want to welcome the students, the Mastery students that just came back from, which event was it? Orange County. So welcome to you as well. So it's Tuesdays with Dave. So it's a live call. You can ask any questions. It's a Q&A. You can ask any questions that you may look to have the answer for. They can be real estate related. They can be life related. I've got a lot of life experience or just about anything you'd like. But the way to get involved is you press star zero. The operator's on the line. Operator will give you a heads up that you're in the queue. And then when it's your turn, she will let you move forward inside of the queue. So, hey, did you realize that it's been 8 years since Michael Jackson died? 8 years ago this week, Michael Jackson died. That seems like it was yesterday, doesn't it? Unbelievable. All right, so a couple of announcements. First one, we have the Ultimate Partnering 9 coming up. That's in July 28th to the 30th in Boston. If you're not familiar with it, that is the networking event of the year. There's going to be great education there, always. But there is going to be students from the last 14 years that we've been teaching, some of them that have gone out and killed it, that are looking to invest in other people's deals. There's going to be newer students there that are just starting out, learning the ropes. And it's all about finding money partners, finding deal partners, and finding team partners. And you will find that there. We have a great networking session, so you're almost forced to meet people if you're an introvert. We have a shark tank that's going to be happening where you can present your deal and one of the sharks just might do it with you. And Emmett Smith is going to be there as well. And Emmett Smith is going to give the keynote. And Matt Romney, Mitt Romney's son, who have a very big real estate business, who we partner with sometimes on deals, is going to be there as well, talking about how to create a $100 million portfolio. So if you did not see the Emmett Smith interview I did, with him, go to, and it was a pretty good interview, short one, about 15 minutes, go to daveinterview.com, daveinterview.com, and if you haven't signed up for Ultimate Partnering 9, number one, what are you waiting for? The early bird special ended last week, but as you're watching Emmett Smith, you will see a pop-up there that says, if you want to register now, put in the promo code DEAL, D-E-A-L, and you will get the early bird pricing. So we got a high five. High five. First high five goes out to Steve Garcia from Downey, California. He did 40 units in Texas. Purchase price was $2.1 million. He was able to negotiate a $38,000 repair allowance. Got the property through a broker relationship. And he says he couldn't have done it without Ari Mentor with the Ari Mentor Group. Thanks, guys. So Steve Garcia from Downey, you get a high five. Next high five goes out to Jeff and Sharon Kissy. Oh, I also want to welcome the new Mastery students from Denver. Had a nice conversation with them Friday afternoon. He closed 132 units in Cincinnati, Ohio, with a purchase price of $7.6 million. Smart move in Cincinnati. We've been talking about how that is a late-blooming emerging market. Jeff hopped on that one, so good for you, Jeff. He got it through a broker relationship. By the way, Jeff's been with us now for about 6 years, been through all of the different programs. And he had a slow start at the beginning. And I can't remember exactly his portfolio is worth now. But he has he's close to 1,000 units, I believe, with a lot of money in equity. But anyways, he's doing really, really well. He did his private money raise through private money investors. Jeff, if you're listening, chime in, will you? Let me know what your portfolio is. He's got another 130 units that he's closing this week in Indianapolis, Indiana, another late-blooming emerging market. Purchase price was $6 million, and he got that one through a broker relationship. So, Jeff and Sherry, you get a high five as well. And the last high five goes out to Mastery student Mike Williams from Tampa, Florida. He closed on a four-unit deal in St. Petersburg. Purchase price was $525,000. The value play was to increase the rents because they're all below market. And that doesn't continue. So that's all I know about that one. But to Mike Williams, high five, getting started on your first deal. Some people say, Dave, you know, where should I start? Should I start on the small deal? Should I start on the big deals? Where should I start? And the answer to that question is you start where you're comfortable. Sure, we want to get you to those bigger deals faster, 100-plus unit deals, make a lot more money. They're easy to do. But you really want to start where you're comfortable so you get that first deal under your belt, because the first one is always the hardest one to do. And then after that, it gets a whole lot easier. And why is it the hardest? Because you are putting your systems in place, putting your teams in place, and you get a lot of – if you've been to a multifamily millions boot camp – we've got the home study system. You've got a good idea of what it takes to do a deal. But until you actually do a deal, you really don't, you know, you don't know the nitty-gritty of the different questions you're being asked, the different experiences that you go through. And once you have that under your belt, you know that, number one, the system works, but number two, that you were able to do it, then you take off like crazy. So your first deal is the most important. So you want to start where you're comfortable and just get that deal under your belt. So Mike, that four-unit deal was bigger than my first deal, which is a three-unit deal. And I only did 3 units for the first. I would only do 3 to 6 units for the first 3 to 6 months. 3 to 6 months for the first 2 to 3 years, because I was afraid to do anything bigger. So, okay, we've got people are queuing up. To queue up, you got to press *0*0 will get you into the queue. The operator will get you onto the line. But I've got some questions from some mastery students that couldn't be on the call that know these calls are recorded and they're put up on the master website. First one is from Vic Raya from Fairfax, Virginia. He says, I've got a quick question. I'll tell you what, you know, when I used to go out and teach and speak and travel, you know, like crazy, educating, people would always come up to me at the breaks and say, I got a quick question. And I would, and after a while, I would just look at him and say, I'll be the judge of that. So Vic says he's got a quick question. He says, I'm in the mastery since for 8 or 9 months. I've closed on 118 unit deals and we're close to closing on another 72 units across the street. Our goal is to get into 1,000 units fast. What is the fastest way to get to those numbers? We are itching at the bit to get bigger faster. Any advice would be helpful. Well, the fastest way to get 1,000 units under your belt is to do 1,000 unit deal. Although that's probably not not a wise thing to do when you're first starting out, because number one, there's not too many of them out there. Number two, to get 1,000 unit deal is probably a portfolio, and you have to analyze the entire portfolio, which is difficult to do. But the fastest way to get there is to do what you're doing. You already started at 100 units, you're at 118, about 72 across the street. So what you're going to do is create the broker relationship, so you're getting pocket listings coming in. You create your relationships with your team, your management company, attorneys, let them know that you're looking for deals as well. Your direct mail campaign in the market that you're looking to invest. And with all of these different marketing things that you're doing, you know, looking at classifieds, you could do some cold calling if you like doing that. But by casting out a big net with your marketing, you'll have deals trickling in on a regular basis. And that will get to you 1,000 units the fastest. It's called a marketing campaign. All right, Lynn Beeman from Baltimore writes in, normally when you do underwriting, you would use historical data such as the T-12s with adjustments made to follow the rule of thumbs. Is there any case in which you would use takeover numbers or even one-year projections? I understand that the training emphasizes Class B and C properties with the Trinity numbers and underwriting as the best situation for a deal. But could we consider A properties? Is there a deviation in the Trinity for that class of property? All right. First of all, let's start with the last question first. Is there a deviation in the Trinity, which the Holy Trinity is the cash a cap rate of 8 or better, a cash on cash return of 12 or better, and a debt coverage ratio of 1.6 or better. All of them combined make up a good deal that you can get private money investors to invest in your deal, and you get a good cut of that deal. So no, you cannot deviate from the Trinity for an A property, even though the yield is going to be less. The yield is going to be less, and the maintenance is going to be less, the risk is going to be less, you still shouldn't deviate. Here's the thing, though. You know, when the correction that's coming up, and there is a correction coming up over the next 2 to 4 years, 5 years, depending on where you are in the country. But there is definitely a correction. In that correction, those A properties are going to trade at the Trinity. So that's when you can accumulate, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 A properties. So keep that in mind while you're doing that. So the first question was, is there any case in which you would use takeover numbers for even 1 year projections? So, you know, Alex, I don't know if you're hearing it, but I'm hearing a lot of crackling here. So it might just be my headset, but maybe you can check into that. So, so would you use 1 year projections or takeover numbers? The answer is no. You always, 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 always use actual numbers. Always. And that will keep you safe. All right, I'm going to do one more quick one. I think it's going to be a quick one. You hear that? Okay. All right. Great, thanks. All right, one more quick one. This one's from Mark Jennings from Orlando, Florida. He says, I'm nervous about talking to people, about being investors in my deal. How do I get over this? What can I do to be more comfortable? Well, it's good to be nervous. We're all nervous talking to investors, especially at the beginning. The way to get you're going to be nervous, so there's no way to get over being nervous. So know that being nervous is good, because when you're nervous, it means that you've got adrenaline flowing through you, which means you're going to perform at your best. So whenever I was nervous before any type of investment meeting or talking in front of people, I would always, and I still do, I always feel like, oh, I'm feeling nervous. Well, that's good, because now I'm going to perform at my best. So that's number one. Number two, take deep breaths. Breathe through your nose and breathe deeply when you start getting nervous, because that will calm you down a little bit. But step three, practice, 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 practice. If you practice and you know what you're going to say and how you're going to say it, and you know your stuff, then it's a lot less nerve-wracking. So practice your presentation on a regular basis, but don't make it so stiff, you know, that you're doing it word for word. And then the other thing is practice with people. Practice with live people. Practice with your family members. But I remember before I would do presentations, I would actually practice in front of pictures. And I would look into the eyes of the pictures, and I would put them all around the room. So I could practice looking into people's eyes while I was doing my presentation, because people do weird things while you're doing a presentation, and it distracts you, and you lose your train of thought, and there's a second voice going on in your head on a regular basis. So practice in front of people that you know that don't care if you screw up. Practice in front of pictures. Practice in front of the mirror. And then go out there and do it over and over again, because the more you do it, the more comfortable you're going to get. So you got to get over the fear of actually doing it the first couple of times. But after you get over that, it'll be a lot easier. But you still be nervous. Well, you should be. All right. So who's my operator on today's call?
Hi, this is the operator for today. How are you?
I'm doing well. Great. Okay. So who's our first caller?
Okay. First question comes from Mike. Mike, please go ahead.
Hi, Dave. This is Mike Urquhart from Great Falls, Virginia.
Hey, Mike. What's going on in Virginia?
Not a lot in Virginia, but we're looking at other areas. But I had a question for you about on-site visits. I'm getting pushback from a broker that says that a letter of intent won't be taken seriously unless I visit the property on-site first. And I haven't gotten that from other brokers, but I was wondering if that happens frequently, or should I just move on and cut loose this broker?
No, that's actually very common. So the way to get around that is, if you're in a market that you're seriously looking to invest in, you should have some team members there, like a management company, an attorney, or whoever. You might just have some people on the ground that you knew through networking. And what you do is say, you can tell them that one of your team members has been by the property. You just send them by. And that should help you move past that. And now if they're looking to actually tour the property, you could, that's something different. You'd have to actually get a team member to tour it for you. But a lot of times they're okay with just the fact that you've been by the property, or one of your team members has been by the property and walked it and posed as a potential renter, because that's typically what we do before we look at a property with a broker. We'll pose as a potential renter to check out the property.
So it would be appropriate to ask a property management company to do that for me?
All right. So if you read between the lines, right? I'm saying that that you tell them that a team member has gone by the property. You could go on, you know, Google Earth, and you could walk that property by Google Earth, and you would be the team member that walked the property. You know what I mean?
Right. No, that so, I've done.
Well, I'll bet you.
So I could just, I mean, what?
Yeah, you don't tell them you looked it up at Google Earth. You just tell them a team member has been by the property.
Okay.
That's all you need to say. And most of the time that will suffice. Oh, you can
okay. Second question. With regard to earnest money, is there
yes.
a standard amount of earnest money you've got to put up?
It's usually, it depends on the size of the contract, but it's anywhere between 1% to 3% of the purchase price.
Okay, that's what I thought, but I wasn't sure. Okay.
All right.
Thank you very
much. I just have you're welcome. Good luck out there, Mike. I got a special guest.
Fine.
Yep.
Hi, everybody.
I got a special guest here. This is Jeannie Orlowski. If you've heard her voice but haven't seen her face, this is who she is.
Me.
Yep. She comes in on Let's Grill Jeannie.
Yep.
Jeannie is my investor relations coordinator. We have seen how many millions come through this office? $130 million in investor funds come through the office, all through Jeannie's office. She's the one that that works with the investors, handles the paperwork and all of that. Not only that, she's on Let's Go Jeannie.
Yep.
And I'd like to tell everybody that I saved Jeannie Orlowski from the Chinese restaurant.
She says that.
Where were you working? Where were you working before you came to me? Jeannie's been with me now for like 17 years, right?
19
years.
Yeah.
Yeah, we go way back.
19. Yeah. Long time. When you were broke?
That's right. When I was broke, living in the one-bedroom apartment with my brokerage company.
Now, we've been together. We've been through a lot. We helped him build this company. We're excited to be part of your lives and have
total team
part
effort.
Of our lives.
So Jeannie analyzes deals. She works with the mastery students and also investor relations coordinator and answers a lot of questions. So I just want to introduce her since we're on live stream.
Okay.
So that's Jeannie.
Happy to help you.
All right. All right, let's go back. And who's our next caller?
Okay, next we have Mark. Mark, please go ahead.
Hey, Dave. This is Mark Nelson, Somerville, Massachusetts. How are you today?
Hey, Mark. What's going on up there in Davis Square?
Ah, lots of good stuff happening. It's always a busy place. A lot of fun up there.
Have you been to that Irish restaurant in Davis Square? I forget what the name of it is. I think it begins with M.
I've probably been to all of them, so it's
that place. I went there with one of my classmates who was from Ireland, and he's friends with the guy who owns it, who's from Ireland as well. And so we all went there. We were at a class reunion, and we all went to that restaurant. And you go to the front door, and it looks so small, but then you go to the back, and it is enormous. It's almost like an acre of people in that property, and the food's great. But anyways, what's going on? What's going on in your world today?
Well, what we're trying to do is we recently, Angela and I put in an LOI on a property in North Carolina. And unfortunately, it wasn't accepted, but the broker has a off-market deal. He said as long as we signed an exclusive agreement with him, we could do that. I told him as long as it's just for that property, I want to be, buy into everything there, then I'm probably okay with that. So, because there's no listing agent, the seller doesn't want to put it through a listing agent. But I get the forms, the agency agreement, and all that. And it, instead of just the property name being there, it was the whole general area. And there's a lot of clauses, and I don't know if you've seen the North Carolina agency agreements for exclusivity. But there's a lot of clauses in there. Like, if they show us anything during this time period, even later on, within so many months, we can still, be liable to pay a commission if we buy it. So,
question are you going to ask me?
Well, the question about is, can I just cross out the terms that I don't like and send this back to them and ask for the original, the correct address of the property?
They want an exclusive agency for all properties after this property?
Right. Well, they did isolate it to the town that this is in, so that does help somewhat. But
isolated to that property only. Don't ever give an agent exclusive for an area.
Yeah.
because you know
that's
you want
right.
to go through the list. You want to go through the listing agent every time you go into a deal, if you can. If you can't, then you can't. But if you're competing against the listing agent should always win if they do their job properly. So,
right.
You know, don't ever sign one of those exclusive agency agreements, except if it's only for one property.
Okay, yeah. I'll just tell them that it's got to be the one property or else. Just the other clauses in there, there's, you know, it's like four pages. And I'm like, okay, what am I missing here if I don't cross out the right stuff, you know? So I just figured I'd pass it by you to see what you're thinking. And
don't do it. Don't do it because you'll buy another property and then they'll look for a commission. You know, you won't have
exactly.
anything to do with somebody else that does it for you. And the next thing you know, they're at your door looking for a commission.
Right, right. All right. Well, that's all I really had today, Dave. We look forward to seeing you at UP9 now.
Ultimate Partnering 9. It's going to be good.
All right, Dave. Thanks again.
Yeah, you're welcome.
We'll talk soon.
Yeah. All right, who's on the wise? Who's next on the wise cracker line?
Up next, we have Anita. Anita, please go ahead.
Hi, Dave. Happy summer. How are you?
Hey, Anita. Summer starts tomorrow. Isn't that awesome?
I know. It's crazy. It was 103 degrees here in Northern California for Father's Day. So summer's already arrived here, seems like.
We had a nice Father's Day, too. We had a really long, rainy spring. But, yeah, it's a beautiful day here in Boston right now. That's for sure. So what's going on in your world?
Did your girl spoil you on Father's Day?
They got me a card and some chocolates.
They know your heart already.
And we all shared a pint of Ben & Jerry's mint chocolate chip, our favorite.
Oh, sounds perfect. My question is what to do when your offer, I put in this offer and I thought the seller and I were on the same page. We went back and forth on the original LOI and then I put in a contract, a purchase offer contract. And then he comes back and he tells me, which I thought we had pretty much a done deal. And then he tells me, well, I've got another offer and I'm considering, you know, several offers. So, you know, you don't know how much they're telling you the truth or if they're just, you know, trying to get more money or what. But anyway, so he then responded, I took the other offer. It was for more. And I'm making you the backup offer. It's a 20-day contingency. So if this falls through, we'll move the contract. So what should my response be to that?
Well, you've got really the only thing you can do is be the backup offer.
Okay, so there's no, like, negotiation. Is that normally if you get a better offer, you just take it so you're not negotiating with a bunch of people?
You're saying that he's telling you that he got a better offer and you're going to be the backup. Is that what I heard?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you've got no choice now. You can only be the backup. You know what
okay.
I mean? There's no other options. What other options do you think you have?
Well, I thought, you know, I would get the opportunity to offer more.
Oh, can you offer more?
Yeah.
I mean, are you still below your maximum allowable offer?
Yeah.
Oh, then I would – well, then the other option is to quickly say, hey, if you're not under a contract, I may be able to offer more. Don't come right out and say I can offer more. Just say, hey, if you're not under contract yet, let me sharpen my pencil. I may be able to offer you more. And
okay.
Well, all right, take a look at it. And then you may say something like, okay, what number do I have to beat? You know what I mean? Just throw something like that and get some price guidance.
Okay.
He may or may not tell you, or he may tell you something that's way too high. You know what I mean? So he may give you a fake number, hoping that you'll come in over that. But, hey, if it's within your maximum allowable offer, you can certainly do it. And if not, then you can just let him know that, you know, you'll sit on the sidelines. Don't – if he says that, you know, that if you don't think that you're going to get it, don't make an additional offer because that's what you're going to hold you to when you're the backup. And if this one fails, the only thing that he really needs to hold you to is to what your original offer was. You know what I mean? So it's kind of like you're playing a game. You have to really feel the game out. You know, it's like playing poker. You got to feel out the other guy's hand. And then play your hand accordingly. There's no set rules to it.
Okay, well, thanks a lot.
All right.
I'll go for it.
Okay, you're welcome. All right, who is next? Hey, I don't know, is anybody? I got some questions as to what is this on my desk, and this is actually a Ganesh. This is a Indian god, even though I'm not Hindu, and I am not Catholic. I'm not Buddhist. I mean, I'm not Christian. I'm not Buddhist. I believe in all, but that is our mascot for the next 3 months because we are on a drive here at the education company to grow and provide additional products and supports for you. So the reason that's there is that Ganesh is in the Hindu world is the preventer of obstacles and the god of learning and wisdom. So I have that there to prevent obstacles, and you'll see it throughout our office if you come visit us. And feel free to come visit us here at 100 Weymouth Street in Rockland, Massachusetts. All right, who is next?
Okay, up next we have Joe. Joe, please go ahead.
Hello, Dave. How are you? Joe from Cherry Hill.
Hey, Joe. What's going on in Cherry Hill? Is that in Carolina?
Oh, a lot of good things. A lot of good things. First question, put out an LOI, and we came back with a counteroffer. And then after I did the walkthrough and everything, I feel like I came in too high. What's the best way to back down, or if can I back down on this LOI?
You already presented it?
Yes.
What did they say?
They countered it. They countered with a lower figure on the asking price, and they're waiting for me to come back now with my response. I think
you're over your
maximum. My offer, my LOI was too high.
Are you over your maximum allowable offer?
A little bit. After I did the numbers and looked at the did the walkthrough through the building, I feel like I was too high.
Is a little bit like it's going to really affect your does it still meet the Trinity? If it, is it just a little bit over, or is it a lot over? Or
a bit over, and also after I went to the bank, their terms were not as good as I wanted them to be. In other words, instead of 30 years, yeah, or 25, and the down payment is 5% higher. So it's throwing my numbers off.
Are you going through a broker?
Yes.
Do you have a good relationship with the broker?
Fairly good. I mean, it's the first time I've worked with them, but we have a pretty good relationship.
This is a hard one because you can't go any higher. You've got to let the broker know you can't go any higher. But then if they actually come back and say, okay, you can have it for that, it's still not a good deal, right?
Well, if he comes back to the I kind of sent him an email and told him where I had to be with the new bank numbers, and I haven't heard back from him yet.
Oh, so you already told them that you need to be at a lower price.
Yes, I did. In an email, I did.
Oh. All right, good. You did what you really should have done. You know, just go back and say, hey, look, I redid my numbers. I got some new information. You know, I didn't realize that, you know, certain figures were out there, and I actually have to be lower. So if they're
okay,
willing to entertain a lower price, I'm willing to do the deal. If they're not, I completely understand.
Okay.
So that's how you
okay, in introduction
that.
With that, Dave, on concessions, what can I ask for at settlement to try and get money back? I mean, how do I mean, is there a figure? Is there a percentage? Or
yeah, you can ask for a repair allowance, and it can't be more than 3% of the purchase price.
3%. Okay, great. Okay,
yeah,
very good, Dave.
You can also ask for seller closing costs. Seller to pay some of the closing costs, and that can be, you know, any figure that entails closing costs. You can also ask for a seller carry as well, so you don't have to come up with money.
Yeah, we already asked for that.
Seller carry.
Yeah, they said no.
So those are the three typical things.
Very good.
All right.
Okay, Dave, thank you.
Good luck out there. All right, I'm going to answer another question. This one's from Carl Smith from Silver Springs, Maryland. He says, I have an apartment in Akron, Ohio, which is 14 units, but 0% occupied. Price is really reasonable. I know we don't like 0% occupied. We don't. But if I can wholesale it, is it still a good deal or should I just walk away? Well, if you can wholesale it and get out of that deal, then, you know, that's not a bad thing, and make money, then that's not a bad thing. You certainly, the reason we don't like 0% occupied, especially if it's your first deal, is the fact that there is so much to learn when you're taking a property with no tenants and doing rehab to bring it to break even and then eventually stabilization. And it's just really not the type of first deal you want to do. And I've said that before, and I've got, and people have gone into those deals, and afterwards they've come to me and said, I wish I took your advice. But no, certainly if you can take that deal under contract and then wholesale it before your due diligence period is over, so you know, you're not on the hook for the deal, that's a possible play for that deal. Hey, if you're just joining us as well, I know we've got a lot of people on here, and I did a really good interview with Emmett Smith, who is headlining the Ultimate Partnering 9 event here in Boston. That's going to happen between July 28th and the 30th, which is going to be over 1,000 people there. It's a great networking event to find private money, to find partners, to find deals there. We're going to have a Shark Tank, we're going to have speed networking. This is going to be great education. We've been doing this now for 9 straight years, and it just keeps getting bigger and bigger, and it's a great time. And this year, Emmett Smith is going to be our MC. He's a big commercial guy, and I did a really good interview with him prior to the event. And if you missed it, go to daveinterview.com, daveinterview.com. You can see it there. If you haven't registered for Ultimate Partnering 9, there will be a link on there where you can register, but put in the word deal, D-E-A-L, in the promo code, and you'll get it for what the early bird special was last week, because you missed the early bird special. So that was a great interview, so check that out. All right, let's go back to the line. Who's there? Who's on the line? Who's my next caller?
Hi, we have no further questions at the moment.
That's very unusual. So what you want to do is press *0. *0 will get you into the queue. *0 will allow you to ask some questions. So let's see. Scott Casey from San Diego, California writes in. He says, I got a contract on a property where the first floor was hardwood floors and the floors above are carpet. The management company is charging a different price for each apartment due to the carpet and hardwood floors. Oh, okay. And when I take over, can I charge the same price for each apartment regardless of the apartment has hardwood floors of carpeting or carpeting? I've never heard of somebody getting a price differential for hardwood or carpeting. I can tell you one thing, it's easier to rent properties with hardwood floors because there's a lot of people that are actually allergic to carpeting. That would be a benefit. So I'm not sure if he's getting a higher price for the hardwood floor or the carpeting and his price differential, but you can certainly charge the same amount. Or maybe you can find out what he's doing and take his lead. Come on up. Oh, someone's at the door. Who is it?
What's up, Dave?
Come on, pull that chair up. This is my brother, Jeff.
Hey, how's it going?
I've known Jeff since in the womb.
Yeah.
Today.
Long time.
Told me he's going to make a big move, and he did.
Yeah.
And I followed suit shortly thereafter.
Hi.
Alex will come in. I'll point that camera over. So this is Jeff, head of our mastery. And Jeff also does the immersion trainings. If you're not familiar with immersion, Jeff takes you out and shows you how to do due diligence on a property. Really helps you understand the numbers. Takes you on a bus.
Yep. I'm alive, you know, like I see many of you, and all you can think of is like, oh, there's that guy up on that video, up on the coaching website, you know, going through all the competencies that you need to know. But yep, I'm alive, standing, and the immersion, just had a great immersion out in Minnesota. It was like really good food out there. You would have liked it.
Really?
Know? Yeah, walleye.
A lot of Swedish people out there.
Yep. Came back with a bunch of recipes.
So, the immersion event happens about 30 different times in major markets around the United States and some sub-markets as well, many of them emerging markets. So we always have the list. Do we have a list on the website? I don't know. If you see the list of boot camps,
yeah,
then the immersion happens 3 weeks after the boot camps. Last day is all about how to build a team building. Mm-hmm. So UP9, you excited?
UP9, you know it. I'm in charge of the speed networking. So if you're going, you need at least 1,000 business cards. Be ready to hand them out. What you need, what you're looking for, boom, boom, beat that clock.
And practice talking.
Yeah.
Because in speed networking, you talk. Yeah, you talk and you jaw start by the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So give some good advice about how to get started for those that are just getting started.
Good advice, like you have to start where you're comfortable. And I think the biggest thing is like develop your broker relationships because the brokers are going to bring you deals. Go out there and network. And like Dave always says, this is a relationship business. So go out there, like find out what they have in common. If you're going to any type of meetup groups, and I always say join one for real estate, right? But then join one for stuff that you like to do or if you're an expert in. If you like to kayak, go to one like that. If you're into cars, right? Especially
what'd you say? Into what?
Automobiles.
Cars.
In the cars. Go to a meetup group where you are the expert. I mean, you're an expert in it. You know what's going on. But when a subject of real estate comes up, you're the only one in that step group.
Yeah, that is a really good idea.
All right, I have to go back to work.
Where are you headed this weekend? What immersion?
I'm going up to Chicago, yeah.
By the way, everybody that always comes back from immersion says what a great time they have with Jeff. And we know Jeff is. Jeff likes to have a lot of fun and does.
That's right. So I'll be out in Chicago, and after Chicago, I'm on my way to where am I going? Oh,
we'll look at the calendar over there.
San Diego, and then Denver,
Orange County.
Hey,
when you go to Chicago, are you going to go to that hot dog place where the people swear at you when you order the food?
Oh, the Nazi version of the hot dog stand?
Yeah.
Definitely.
I heard it's crazy.
Yep.
All right, good. Thanks, man. Thanks for stopping by.
You bet.
All right. Who's next on the Wisecracker line? Operator?
Okay, up next we have Mark. Mark, please go ahead.
Hi, this is Mark Engelman from Martinez, California. How are you today, Dave?
Hey, Mark, what's going on?
We're new students. We signed up in San Diego about 3 weeks ago. We're into our mentoring with Don Goff. Great guy. Really looking forward to our call again tomorrow morning. It'll be our second call. So my wife, Debbie, and me, she's a broker. I'm an agent of 3 years. She's a broker of 18, and we've done some flips. That's just a little background. So this is an avenue we're really looking forward to. We found a couple properties in just looking around in the Bay Area, one in the Bay Area, one in 2.5 hours west of Seattle. The one in the Bay Area we're more interested in because it's only an hour and 20 minutes from my house, anywhere in the Bay Area pretty much. It's 52 units. It's a D, maybe a D-plus property, surrounded by two B, B-minus properties that have recently been upgraded, fixed. They look nice. So you basically got the ugly duckling on the street. It's 52 units. I believe there's some Section 8 in there. In reading some of your material, that didn't seem to scare you off or other people off. We're currently into our mentoring program. What's the other program where you get the money? That's how new I am in this program.
Private money?
I'll get the book. It's on my desk.
Private money program?
Sponsorship. The sponsorship event training. We're
currently
about halfway through that. So we met the sponsors and stuff. I guess my question to you is, this is in the nutshell as much as I know and I'm learning, is we want to put an LOI in. There are two other LOIs in, and this property is right now, it's family owned, it's lacking maintenance, it's just been neglected, and you know, and there's six kids, they want their money, and so that's kind of the background. So there's two LOIs in for 65% of what they're asking, which is $5 million in two LOIs. So I want to put an LOI in.
How do you know that?
The broker told us that. We've met the broker, we've walked the property. We've taken pictures.
Okay.
We've done some.
Did you ask him why those offers weren't accepted?
Because what they want is a proof of funds, and the reason they want a proof of funds is the broker said that they went through escrow and it fell out because whoever they went through escrow had really didn't have the money to do it. So now what I'm told is the broker saying, unless I get a proof of funds, you know, we're not even going to show you the numbers, which we didn't like that much. So we talked to Eric with Capital, I guess. It's Eric, I can't think of his last name. It's the guy that was at our conference with you. Yeah. And he's working with us. We got to give him some information, and he thinks he can give us some kind of a proof of funds that will satisfy. Because obviously we don't have that kind of money. I mean, we're going to need sponsors to help us and all that stuff.
All right, so what questions do you have for me?
The question I have with you is, am I barking up the wrong tree here, Dave? Should I walk away from this? Should I continue down the road? I don't know what I'm doing here, so what do you think?
What's the first of all, you're very smart to be asking that question. So you said it's 52 units and it needs rehab. What percent occupancy is it?
it's probably 60-65 is what he said. And none of these
but all the other properties around it, all the other properties around it have been upgraded?
Yes, they have. They look nice, too. Compared, yeah, they've done some work to them. So they're BB minuses.
Well, here's the thing. What I would do is you're in the sponsorship program, okay? So I would run this deal by Genie, although you don't have any numbers. See, that's the problem. But
no, I don't.
I would run this deal by Genie, and we've got sponsors that like deals like this. What side of the country is it on? Did you say? Don't give me the exact town.
It's in the Bay Area.
Okay. Yeah. I know a guy. We know a guy in that area that if that deal works, he would love to do it with you. He's one of our sponsors.
That's the Sacramento guy, the guy up in we saw him last, big guy, probably about 45, 50, big guy. El Dorado, he's in El Dorado.
Is his name Mike?
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly. Him. Yeah, Mike started with us after his company declared bankruptcy like 8 years ago, and he lost everything. His wife was pregnant, and then he did his first deal, made $125,000 in acquisition fee, another $140,000 in repair allowance, so he got $390,000 back at closing. And then he had a partner in on the deal that put up all the money, and he got a 50-50 split. The deal was that good, and he got over $4,000 in cash flow. And since that time, his portfolio has reached over about $150-160 million in worth. And, he's doing really well. He tells me that since he met me, he has he gained 30 pounds and got 3 kids.
Yeah, that's what he said on the sponsorship tape we saw a couple nights ago. Yeah, we see a huge, I mean, it's a 2-year project to turn the property around, we think, and we know that. We've done some flips. This is much bigger than we've ever done. But the guy that signed us up.
You need a good partner that knows how to do it.
Yeah. The guy that signed us up in San Diego, we showed him the paperwork on it. And he looked straight at us and said, you guys can make a lot of money on this. It's a guy that's from Boston, or maybe he's from Florida. His family all through his life,
Ryan.
His grandfather.
Ryan.
I can't think of, yeah. All right, so you think we should get a hold of Mike then and talk to
I think you get a hold of Genie first. Genie will get a hold of Mike, and then you give him the information. And then he can tell you whether or not he's initially inclined to do the deal. But the bottom line is you need somebody that has experience that have done deals like this in the past, partner with to get the deal done. You don't want to do this yourself the first time.
Somebody's going to do this deal. Why can't it be me?
Well, the answer to that question is you don't have enough experience and you could lose your shirt.
The reason is why can't it be me with your guys' help? Let me finish that.
It can be. That's right. Yeah.
Yes, and I think
we can
do this.
With the proper education and help.
Yes, yes. All right, we'll look forward to seeing you next month in Boston, okay?
All right, we'll see you there. Bring your shorts. It's going to be beautiful weather.
You bet, buddy. Thank you so much. Look forward to meeting you. And hey, we scuba dive, too, so we can swap some stories.
All right, that sounds good. Yeah, you don't want to dive over here. You can only see like 3 feet in front of you, and things bump you in the night.
Uh-oh. All right, man. True. Look forward to meeting you. Thank you.
All right. Talk to you soon. All right. Who's our next caller?
Okay. Next, we have Nancy. Nancy, please go ahead.
Hi, Nancy. Dave. This is Nancy. Hi there. How are you today, Dave?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Good, good, good. Hey, I'm also, my partner and I went through the training only about a month ago, and so we are eagerly out here trying to get things done. I've run into a couple of situations where a portfolio has a duplex, single family homes combined, and that sort of scared us away. Numbers work, but when you have a conglomeration like that, is that just over our head to begin with?
What is it again?
Well, there's a combination of duplexes plus single-family homes and one apartment building, all in a portfolio. So because of the variety of properties, we sort of looked at each other and went, well, we don't know how to do this. So do you walk when you have that kind of a combination, or what do you do with something like that?
How many properties?
4 duplexes, 1 apartment building, and it looks like 3 single-family homes.
And
the apartment building is a 16-unit building, Pardon me?
Are they all spread out throughout the town, or are they close to each other?
They're all close to each other.
Well, it's definitely a deal you could do, and I would go into this deal thinking that you would go into it getting a loan where you can reduce the loan amount when you sell different properties. And I would first peel off those single families and sell those if it's a good market. First, you got to analyze it. You're going to have to analyze these individually because they're all so small. So you're going to have to do comparables and determine what the worth is of each of the units and then find out what they're selling them all for. Then you got to find a bank. And if it's worth it, you make a good profit by maybe selling three or four of them off and keeping one of the smaller apartment buildings to get some experience owning. Or even just separating them all and selling them all off individually, it may be worth more. But that would probably be the exit strategy. If they're all close together, it's not going to be that much more work to determine the value of them.
Okay.
But if you don't know how to do that, you would need to learn or get a good real estate broker to do it for you that you trust.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we're working with a wonderful.
This is not a cash flow play.
No, no. This would be a parcel them off like what you're suggesting, you would think. But from analyzing them, we were trying to analyze it at one point all together, and that doesn't work. So looking at them individually was what we'd started to do. But I thought we'd run it past you just to see, with this kind of a mix, should we just walk?
There might be opportunity there. So see if there is.
Okay. All right, we'll finish doing the analyzing. Thanks so much.
All right, good luck.
Thank you.
Okay, who's our next caller on this beautiful, beautiful Tuesday afternoon here in Boston? I was just thinking about the Boston Celtics. You know, they just traded the number one pick for number three. I think they know that something's up there. They're going to get the guy that they want. Just thinking about the world champion New England Patriots and how great it is to relive that game in my mind over and over again. And just thinking about how great it is to be alive. All right, who's next? Who's next? Hey, Jermaine, come on in here, will you? Let me introduce you as well. So who's next?
We have no further questions at the moment.
Very unusual. Must be because it's the close to the first day of summer that we don't have as many questions as normal. People out there playing in the sun, having a good time. All right. In walking is Jermaine. And for those of you in Mastery that know Jeannie and Jeff and get a lot of responses or send a lot of emails over and have deals analyzed by Jermaine, this is Jermaine.
How you doing, guys? How are you today?
And what's unique about Jermaine is he is a twin and his mother is a twin.
And I have twin sons.
And he has twin sons. How ironic is that?
Yeah. Didn't skip a generation for me. So
when your twin sons were born and you went through that like first year with them,
mm-hmm.
did you think, oh, this is it. God's getting revenge. Is that it?
I thought about my mother all those years ago when she said, I hope you have kids just like you. So it came true. So.
And you did.
Yep.
Not only that, Jermaine also has one of my cats.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, that's a crazy
My cat had kittens, so Jermaine took it into his family. I need to have good families for these kittens when I was giving them away.
Yeah. It's a good cat, though. We love it.
It is crazy.
Yeah.
So so you're here helping out the Mastery students,
yep.
Analyzing a lot of deals, answering a lot of questions.
Yep. I mean, doing everything, answering questions, analyzing deals, helping students get over their fears, which a lot of students have. So I'm here to help in any way I can. So. If you have deals out there that you closed, give me a call because we want to put you guys on the wall.
Oh, yeah.
That's very important for us.
We got a wall of fame. We got 12,000 square feet here, and it's all lined with students that have done deals.
Yep.
And our wall of fame. So we want to get you up there if you've done some deals. And the interesting thing about Jermaine is the fact that he's a big sports fan. Big sports fan.
A huge sports fan.
Yeah. And during the NCAA championships about 14 years ago, 18 years ago, 21 years ago, his wife went into labor. Right?
Oh, yes.
Why did this story come out? We like to have celebrations here in the office.
I think we were having a baby shower from
One of the ladies was having a baby here, so we were having a shower, and it came out on, his daughter interns here.
Yep.
Yeah, so it just so happened that I said, Jermaine, talk about the day she was born.
Yep. So that was 19 years ago during the NCAA finals. I think that was a tournament game. And my wife was going through labor. And as she was going through labor, as women know, you know, you got the pains, the contractions. And I wasn't paying attention to my wife at all. I was too busy watching the games. And she was not, let's just say she was not happy about the fact that I was upset that she was going to labor while the games were going.
Well, what happened is you went to the hospital,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, we went to the hospital, then we had to come back.
They sent them home because I know I was not ready yet.
Of course, I was happy that we got to go home because I got to watch the games, but she wasn't happy about
it. And she went into labor again. She's like, come on, woman. What the heck? The game's on.
Yep, I was not happy that she was. I've been paying for that for 19 years. So.
All right, so this is Jermaine, and
yep.
He's here to serve you.
Yep.
All right, man.
Anything you need.
Thanks,
Dave. Appreciate it.
All right, so who is next on the line? Who's got the next question?
Okay, up next we have Freddie. Freddie, please go ahead.
Hey, Dave, how are you? This is Freddie in here in New Jersey.
Oh, nice to meet you. Hold on a second. For those of you that we're live streaming this at the same time as doing it over the phone as well, so if you're wondering why these people are popping in, it's just because if you're not watching us live on the live stream, you should get an email that we are live streaming. You get it next time. But that's why I just had these people pop in. But what's going on there, Freddie?
Oh, no, nothing much. I'm just starting in the coaching and the training. But I want to share some frustration that maybe you will help me go over it.
Okay.
I partnered with someone in a deal, and we split our responsibilities. He was supposed to find the properties, put it under contract, and then I was supposed to raise the money. He found the property, put it under contract. When we were working on the numbers, I just feel like, okay, this is a lot of work just to raise the money. And when you split the difference, even though we split it a third each, so I got a third, he got a third, and the sponsor got a third, I didn't see that much money in the first year because we had to raise rents. And in the first year, all the money went to the investors. So after all that effort, I said, oh my, I'm going to get just this little. I can make probably more money doing just like selling one single family. So what would be the ideal numbers or at least expected numbers when you get a deal the first year?
All right, so people set up deal structures a lot of different ways, and I can give you examples of a couple of different deal structures, number one. Number two, it's always going to be dependent upon the size of the deal, how much you're going to get in cash flow, and what your share is going to be in the equity as well. But one of the things that we've done is we've always put aside on the company dollar side, you know, you have the investors, let's say the investor gets 60%, and then the company dollar side is 40%. So in that 40%, we would carve that down to 25% goes to the person that raised the money, and 75% is split up between the rest of the people. So if you brought in all the money for the deal, you would get that 25% plus your part of the other equity. And then if you brought in like 50% of the 25%, you would get 50%. So that's one way that partners sometimes carve up a deal. You know, the classic way that you just described is the classic way. One person knows how to raise the money. One person knows how to get the deals. And maybe one person is really good at the financials, or you got two people together. Now, right now, you've got a sponsor. So that person is a third. So it makes it a little bit more difficult. But, you know, if you can keep it at two people, that's really the ideal number of partners in a deal. I've seen some students, you know, partner together and they structure a deal and there's five or six of them in the deal. You know, or then they'll bring me the deal and they'll say, hey, you know, will you do this deal with us? And I'll look at the deal and it's like, who's going to make any money on this deal? What's the sense of doing it? There's too many partners in the deal. So it's all in the way that you structure it going in. And then you got to determine who's the most valuable. You know, the person that can bring in the money, they can certainly have a claim as being the most valuable because the deal can't be done without money. But in the same respect, the person that actually brings the deals has a claim to say, hey, you know, if there's no deals, we don't need the money anyways. So they have high value as well. So you know, usually in a 50-50 split, if you're getting outside money, that's where you'll carve out the additional 25% for the outside money coming in, like maybe a third, maybe two people are partners and they're good at different aspects, but neither one are really good at raising money. then you'd give that third person a carve out. But in your particular case, I think, you know, I don't know if you're going to need a deal for the next one, but once you drop that sponsor, if you like your partner, good partners are hard to find. So if you like your partner and you can trust them, you know, and there's high integrity, you know, maybe you get through the first couple of deals and they're a little skinny, but then after that, you guys do great things together. You know what I mean? If you look at the big picture.
Yeah. Perfect. What would be a good number for the first year in a cash flow for me?
What size
for
deal?
For anyone. Let's say $4 million deal.
A $4 million deal is the average price of a 100-unit deal. You know, and then the average 100-unit deal is going to do about $10,000 a month net cash flow. But that's got to be carved out amongst the investors. So if you've got a 60-40 split, that's $6,000 for the investors and $4,000 for the partners. So it's all going to depend on the deals and you know how good the deal is in terms of the numbers and how many partners you have in the deal on the sponsorship side and on your side. So I mean, you could certainly, the first year is really all about creating your base, creating your teams, creating your partners, creating your systems. The second year is the year that you'll take off and you'll start doing a lot of larger deals and you'll start seeing a lot of cash flow and equity coming in. Maureen Miles is a good example. Her first year, she went into the Atlanta market at the right time. Her first year, she was building a base. She was going out there getting deals on her own. She was doing a couple of smaller deals, but she came to an ultimate partnering event. She met her partner. I think his name is Richard, but I can't remember exactly. But they met at an event. He's really good. They're both really good at the math, actually. But they both have strengths and weaknesses that complement each other. And when they became partners, they just took off. They did three deals within that first year. She herself got over $600,000 in acquisition fees. I think it was $4 million in equity. And I don't know what her cash flow was, but it was really good. And that was just her portion, not including the investors. But it was a 117-unit deal. It was a 252-unit deal. And I think the third deal was up around 170 or something like that. So it can happen fast, but after you put the time in to create the infrastructure, after the infrastructure is in and you get a deal or two under your belt, then boom, it happens really fast.
Perfect. All right. Thanks for the advice.
All right. Good luck out there.
Thanks.
All right. It's at the top of the hour. We usually only go about an hour, but if we get additional questions, I'll extend it. Because I usually have a meeting right at 2:00 that pops me out of this, but I don't today. So do we have another question?
Yes, we actually have three more.
All right, I'll take three more questions. Sounds good.
Okay, up next we have Mark. Mark, please go ahead.
Hey, Dave, it's Mark.
Hey, Mark.
From Ottawa, Ontario.
How's it going up there?
How are you doing? I'm pretty good.
Yeah.
How are you doing?
Doing good.
I think your line may have been having a problem because I tried a couple of times and you said there was no questions and I was hitting star zero and it wasn't going into the queue. But anyways.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, because it's really surprising. Very rarely do we have no questions.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
That's why I thought maybe it was the line that was the problem. But anyways, I kept trying and eventually it did pop in. But I've got a question regarding financing. We're starting to get some traction on some deals. Actually, one of our markets is Louisville, and I was just there again last week. And one of the brokers that we're dealing with were kind of retreading over old deals that we had looked at previously that didn't go anywhere for one reason or another. And this one is a Class B neighborhood, nice asset, not very big, I think it's 28 units. And when he told me that it wasn't going anywhere, he's had a couple of offers, but he never accepted them because they were too low. So I thought, okay, let's see what he can do or what he's willing to do. So I thought, okay, is he willing to take on some owner financing? And he said, I think he will at this point. So he's willing to take on owner financing. He shaved his number down from his asking about $500,000 so far. And so we're trying to get in kind of skinny, if you know what I mean, without having too much fees and stuff to get in as late as we can. So
Okay. We're
basically at the point right now where he said, okay, well, tell me how much owner financing you want. and we'll see if we can make this deal happen. So I'm trying to see, trying to make a connection with a broker that can do this kind of a deal with us. So I don't know if Eric Stewart is the right guy to call. Okay, will he do a deal if the equity portion is basically put up by the, by the seller?
Well, the reason you'll want to call somebody like Eric Stewart, who is a mortgage lender, I mean a mortgage broker, is the fact that he will know the lenders that will allow subordinated financing, and that's what that's called, subordinated debt, because not a lot of them do. So, yeah, so he would know what is available out there.
Okay. I suspect that was one of my calls to make, and I was kind of a little leery because, don't forget, we're Canadians, so I thought maybe that might be a bit of a stumbling block as well. So I think I'll give him a call tomorrow.
He'll walk you through the whole thing.
Yeah, see if you can pull it off. All right, perfect.
Yep.
I appreciate it. Oh, actually, I do have one more question. I was going through the sponsorship CDs. At one point, you're going through the due diligence and you're going through the credit card fees for they're using credit cards to pay the rent, but they weren't charging back the fees for the credit cards. Is that something that normally you do when you pick up a property? I know you said on the video saying, yeah, we're going to change that. I mean, the first time I'd heard that. Is that something you just
We try to invoke that, when we can on different properties, because it makes it a lot easier for them to. It's up to the tenant whether or not they want to do it. You know, they do get charged back that fee. Or if you don't charge back the fee, then it's that much less rent that you get.
Gotcha. Okay, perfect. Thank you.
All right, good luck.
Thanks.
Oh, okay, who's next?
Okay, up next we have Christy. Christy, please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Dave. It's Christy from San Francisco.
Hey, Christy, what's going on over there in San Francisco?
It's a beautiful day. Getting hotter every day.
Yeah.
Too warm for me. So quick question.
Gotta stay in the shade. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm parking in the car in the shade right now, just waiting to go to an appointment. So just quick question. You know, when we give the investor the K-1, is that considered as a capital gain, or a regular income tax? Do you know what rate do they pay?
K-1 is a pass-through, so they're going to pay whatever their income tax rate is, the personal income tax rate is.
So it's not like owning a rental property, then you get that lower tax rate, right?
A lower tax rate through passive. A K-1 is going to be based on whatever your whatever your tax rate is, your personal tax rate is. So that's what will be taxed on.
I see. So it's not the same benefit as you owning a real estate directly, the owner.
It actually, it depends on how you get into the deal. But if you get into the deal as an equity partner through an LLC, you can typically participate in depreciation. And that's the big benefit of owning real estate, is the fact that you participate in depreciation. And, you know, in a lot of ways, it shows that you typically don't make money on your properties because of depreciation.
Right. So depreciation is one benefit, but the income is treated as regular income. It's not like the lower 12 or 15% for the rental.
Correct.
I see. Okay. All right, that's all. Thanks.
All right. All right. Stay out of the sun.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. Who's our last caller today? Hey, don't forget, you can go over to daveinterview.com and see the interview that I did with Emmett Smith, daveinterview.com. And the promo code, put the word DEAL and you'll get a deal. Okay. Who's the last caller?
Last caller is Tricia. Tricia, please go ahead.
Hi, Dave. Can you hear me? This is Tricia.
I can.
Oh, hi. Calling from sunny Orange County, California. How you doing?
Nice. I'm doing good. What's going on out there?
Okay, I'm in the mastery program, and I have a sponsorship. I'm in the sponsorship program, and I've been in it for about 2 months. I love your program. Love my coach, Don Goff. Shout out to him. But I'm working on a deal in Arizona, and I submitted an LOI, and they counteroffered, and it still meets the Trinity, but it's a little more. And they sent me the sales contract, but I have earnest money of my own to put up, but I don't have a sponsor nor the down payment that's needed. Is it safe to sign the sales agreement before I have those pieces of the puzzle lined up?
Well, the sponsor likes to see the numbers going into the deal. It's not that you can still get a sponsor and they're going to redo your numbers to make sure that numbers were done right before they'll sign off of anything. So the answer is, remember, you get typically a 30-day due diligence period. So you can walk away from that deal for any reason in 30 days. So if you can't raise the money, you know, if something comes up in the deal that's beyond your control that will prevent you from closing, you can walk away from the deal and it won't cost you anything other than some of the due diligence is going to cost you money, like the inspection and all that, but it's not going to cost you your deposit. So the answer is you don't like to go into P&S without your sponsor in place and without your money in place. But can you do it and close successfully? Yes. Are you going to have to hustle? Yes. And are you going to be under a lot of stress? Yes. But you do have 30 days to walk away. Really not losing anything.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. All right. Good luck out there. All right. So for mastery students, you know what your homework is, and it is 2 and 2. Go out there, put in 2 offers. It doesn't have to be a good deal. You just need to be putting offers in on a regular basis, because if you're not putting in offers in this business, you are not in business. So that's number one. And go to your bootcamp manual, get the how to put in a lowball offer script, so that you're actually building a relationship with the agent instead of insulting them with a lowball offer. So that's number one. Number two, get into 2 networking situations. That's the other 2. So that you can be getting committed investors onto your investor list, not meaning that you're taking their money, just putting them on your list. And then you won't have the problem that I think it was Trish, that's her name, the last caller, who's going into P&S without having, a private money list. So that's why you do 2 and 2 every week. If you just simply do 2 and 2, you can't help but be successful. For anybody else out there, you want to learn more about the mastery program, go call the office, 781-878-7114. Jeannie will be happy to, who you just saw earlier, be happy to take you through the process. So 781-878-7114. Talk to Jeannie about it. All right, everybody. Next week is Let's Grill Jeannie, and I'll see you in 2 weeks. Bye, everybody.